5. HMS Royal Carus 58, City of Talisburg, Kingdom of Old Carus.
I was wondering when they'd get around to this, Caleb Armok said sourly. He, Charlian, their daughter, and one Captain Merlin Athrawis were afloat once more. Empress of Carus was still in yard hands, so he and Charlian flew their standard aboard HMS Royal Carus, one of the new 58-gun galleons designed to avoid Empress of Carus's problems. They wouldn't actually be leaving Talisburg for their return to Chisholm until the morning tide, but they'd decided to get Princess Alana aboard ship and settled that afternoon. Of course, that also meant they had to be a bit more careful about keeping their voices down, given the thinness of cabin bulkheads.
Well, Brian Lock Island said rather more philosophically from his own flagship, we figured they'd have to decide what to do with all those ships before Singwu's passage froze. Now we know. I have to admit, though, I didn't expect them to be quite this subtle. Gather their fleet in a western port, then send them all west?
He shook his head.
That's a lot sneakier than I anticipated, frankly.
Lock Island had a point, Merlin conceded. The port of Angelburg on Chantry Bay lay on the southern shore of Singwu's Passage, almost 3,000 miles east of Temple Bay. It was nearly halfway to the eastern mouth of the passage, where it debouched into the Icewind Sea, and well over 7,000 miles from the passage's western mouth. Had it not been for the orders to the various squadron commanders, he would have assumed they were planning on coming east instead of west. Fortunately, they had been able to read those orders, which confirmed that what they were really planning was what Merlin and Lock Island had both considered to be their smartest move all along.
They are being clever, aren't they?
Prince Narman remarked from Erastor, where his own galleon was waiting to join Royal Carus for the voyage to Chisholm.
Maybe so, but now that we've caught them at it, the problem's deciding what to do about it,
Dominic Stainer put in from Thole Bay over his own comm.
No, Caleb said, his tone ever more sour than it had been. It isn't deciding what we do about it. It's deciding how we go about doing it. We're all agreed that this is the most logical thing for them to be doing after what happened to Gwilym. And I think we have to honor the threat, which means reinforcing both Coruscant and Chisholm.
I'm afraid you're right, Merlin sighed.
So am I, Lock Island conceded. But while we're worrying about what Thirsk might do, let's not forget about Coleman and Jarrus.
Merlin grimaced. The fact that he dared not insert remotes into the temple itself always left a blank area at the very apex of their intelligence analyses. There was simply no way to get eyes and ears inside the innermost councils of the group of four, and their ignorance of what went on there was all the more frustrating because of their ability to penetrate every other council of war on the planet. He kept reminding himself that he and his allies had better intelligence on their enemies' plans and capabilities than anyone else in the history of mankind. The problem was that they needed that kind of advantage if they were ever going to prevail against someone so numerically superior to themselves. And they'd been waiting for 5 days to find out which way the church's new navy was going to jump as autumn came on. As Lock Island had pointed out, they'd known Alain Maguire and his colleagues would have to choose a course of action before the northern ports started to freeze. Of course, they could have decided to just sit there, but no one had really expected that. After the declaration of holy war and the bloody fashion in which Clintan had secured the group of four's rear in the temple and Zion, it had seemed a foregone conclusion that they weren't going to simply leave 100 or so brand new galleons frozen into the ice for several months. As Merlin, Caleb, Lock Island, and Rockpoint had considered the church's options, they'd concluded that there were three possible ice-free destinations, Shui Bay, Garath Bay, and the Gulf of Matthias. There were arguments in favor of all three. For that matter, there'd been a fourth possibility, Bedard Bay, in the Republic of Sidermark. North Bedard Bay would actually have been the most defensible of all the ice-free ports available, and given Clinton's near-psychotic suspicion of all things Sidermarkian, basing a sizable contingent of the Church's new fleet right off the capital city's waterfront, as a suggestion that the Lord Protector should behave himself, could have been tempting. There was also the question of just how the Church might choose to split up the ships it was moving south. In fact, Merlin had rather hoped they'd parcel the northern units out between several possible destinations, instead of keeping them concentrated. Having the opposing navy scattered around in as many separate subfleets as possible struck him as a very good idea from Karras's viewpoint. But whatever he might have hoped, Merlin had always expected the Church to end up choosing the strategy it had now selected. Given the Earl of Thirsk's accomplishments, combining as much as possible of the Church's total naval strength under his command made a lot of sense. Not only that, but under Thirsk's energetic management, Doleran foundries were now churning out more and better guns than anyone else outside of Karras. They were mostly still casting in bronze while they tried to get a handle on the greater difficulties involved in producing reliable iron guns, but their output had risen steadily. And if they were much less innovative than Carizian foundry operators, they were enormously more innovative than the Harchongese.